Chapter 6. Fermenting Sour Tonic Beverages. Sour tonic beverages comprise a broad group of ferments that I have only recently begun to conceptualize in a unified way. In wild fermentation, I included a recipe for sweet potato fly, a lightly fermented beverage from Guyana made with sweet potatoes, in the dairy chapter, because whey was the starter. Russian kvass in the grain chapter, ginger beer in the wine chapter, and shrub in the vinegar chapter. Kombucha, which I had no idea what to do with, ended up in the grain chapter, oddly enough, since it is made with tea and sugar, but no grains whatsoever. Now I can see that all these beverages and many others, including specific beverages produced in long continuous traditions by peoples around the world, as well as newfangled variations being created by revivalists, are varied manifestations of a common theme. They are tasty beverages, somewhat acidic, somewhat sweet, and in some cases lightly alcoholic, teeming with live lactic acid bacteria, among others, and generally regarded as healthful and tonic. Tonic, according to my old Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, means invigorating, refreshing, bracing. This group of beverages, soft drinks, if we may reclaim a corrupted phrase, certainly exhibits those qualities. Most, but not all, of these beverages require starter cultures of some sort. Once you get them going, they are all self-perpetuating. They make the most sense as a continuous rhythm in which you keep starting new batches with the previous batch. Or, to think of it another way, you keep feeding the culture. I think that for people wanting to incorporate simple, natural rhythms into their lives, as well as the health benefits of live bacterial cultures, the sour tonic beverages offer many mouth-watering, thirst-quenching possibilities, and boundless opportunities for experimentation and innovation. Some starters, such as ginger bug or sourdough starter, can be easily started in your kitchen with common ingredients. In other cases, such as kombucha and water kefir, the starters are communities of bacteria and fungi that have evolved into distinctive physical forms, which are large enough for us to see, handle, and transfer from batch to batch. These entities are known as SCOBYs, symbiotic communities of bacteria and yeast, which coordinate their reproduction and produce a shared skin. To enjoy these ferments, you must first obtain the cultures. Fortunately, they grow with use, so enthusiasts are always eager to share them. Resources lists a number of international culture exchanges, people with SCOBYs to share, listed geographically, as well as relevant information on commercial sources. An online search will turn up many other sources, both commercial and more informal. After you obtain these cultures and grow them for a while, you are likely to find yourself with an abundance of SCOBYs to share. Spread the cultures and the cultural revival. It's hard to say with any exactitude what the alcohol content of any of these beverages may be when you make them. They all have the potential to be at least lightly alcoholic, especially if sealed in a jar, thus favoring anaerobic activity. If you wish to minimize this in order to make beverages appropriate for children or someone who is avoiding alcohol, ferment for as short a time as possible. This enables fermentation to create carbonation along with probiotic bacteria and limited acidity, but forestalls the accumulation of significant alcohol. A small amount of alcohol production, below the legal limit for non-alcoholic beverages of 0.5%, is negligible and generally cannot be perceived. Common foods and beverages, ranging from bread to orange juice, often contain such traces of alcohol. Carbonation. All these beverages may be carbonated if desired. Personally, I love carbonated beverages. Growing up in our time, how could any of us resist the allure of their omnipresence, their insidious marketing, their addictive sweetness and stimulation, and the satisfying sensations of the explosive bubbles going down our throats? Before there were tanks of compressed CO2 to carbonate sweet syrups into sodas, there was the natural carbonation produced by fermentation. Carbonation is the release of trapped carbon dioxide. Ferments from open vessels may be lightly effervescing if they are highly active, but if you wish to carbonate a beverage, wait until fermentation is actively progressing, as evidenced by vigorous bubbling. Then transfer and seal it in bottles that can hold some pressure, such as bale top bottles, beer bottles with crimp caps, or soda bottles. Then let the bottles ferment, but only for a short time, in some cases measured in hours, depending upon temperature and level of fermentation activity. Refrigerate and enjoy. Carbonating sweet beverages can be dangerous. It is imperative that you understand this. A vigorously active ferment trapped in a bottle has the potential to explode. When alcoholic beverages are naturally carbonated, such as champagne or beer, typically the fermentation is completed to the point at which all the sugar has been converted to alcohol. A tiny amount of sugar is then added to prime the bottles, enough to create carbonation, but not enough to explode bottles. It's different when beverages are bottled only lightly fermented, with a good proportion of sugar still intact, as these tonic beverages are typically enjoyed. The remaining sugar has considerable potential to ferment and produce CO2 once bottled, leading to the possibility of excessive carbonation, which can be dangerous. Bottling must be done with care and attention. This is not meant to scare anyone, just to create awareness. Moderate carbonation enhances and enlivens these tonic beverages. High-pressure carbonation results in wasted beverages and explosive bottles. Wasted beverages are sad, but no big deal. Recently, my friend Spikey opened a bottle of our friend Gonaway's ginger beer at a swimming hole on a hot day. On the hot country roads, then hiking down into the river gorge, I looked forward to the moment I'd pull it out of the bag and surprise our friends with it. The moment came, and I popped the top. It thudded like a big marching band drum, and a geyser of ginger beer shot up over our heads. What a thrilling sight! Collectively, like kindergartners, everyone groaned. I suppose we might feel grateful that the glass hadn't exploded in my bag. But we could only stare at the puddle of ginger beer on the rocks, almost the entire contents of the bottle, with dismay. Watching your fermented beverage spew all over may feel tragic, but exploding bottles can hurt, disfigure, or even potentially kill people. Missouri fermentation enthusiast Allison Ewald made water kefir fruit beer from grape juice, bottled it in glass bale-top bottles, and set them on top of her refrigerator, a warm microclimate, to ferment overnight. Allison awoke around 7 a.m. to the sound of bottles exploding. Her partner Mark was standing near the fridge, and their daughter Cole was 10 feet away. Allison reports, "Everybody was unscathed, though Mark had tiny glass crystals scattered across his bare back. There were glass splinters on every surface in the house, not to mention grape soda. We found chunks of glass the size of marbles on the other side of the bed and across the sheets, a good 30 feet from the explosion. It is utterly miraculous that we didn't even bleed, even as we mopped and wiped and swept it all up for the next 2 hours. Maybe someone will avoid a hospital trip because of our experience." I have also heard the stories of people who were not so lucky. Rhode Island fermentation enthusiast Raphael Lyon writes, "A few weeks ago, a friend of ours was seriously injured by an exploded glass bottle of what was some kind of ginger beer or root beer, pretty much all bombs unless really carefully watched or refrigerated." Part of the problem is that it is difficult to gauge the pressure building in glass bottles. One traditional way of gauging carbonation is to add a few raisins to each bottle of a ferment you are seeking to carbonate. As the contents of the bottle carbonate, the raisins float to the top. In my practice, I have come to bottle these still-sweet fermenting beverages mostly in plastic soda bottles. Even if I bottle most of them in glass, I bottle some in plastic. The benefit of plastic bottles, in this context, is that you can feel how pressurized they have become by squeezing the bottle and gauging resistance. If the plastic bottle easily yields, it has not pressurized. If it is firm and resists pressing in, it has pressurized and should be refrigerated before more pressure builds or enjoyed quickly. Another safety measure I recommend is to wrap your bottles of fermenting sweet beverages in towels to buffer any potential explosion. To minimize mess and reduce losses of beverages to spewing when bottles are opened, chill bottles before opening, and open them over a clean bowl in a sink so the bowl can catch at least some of the beverage if they spew. Begin by opening bottle gradually, and if you see a large quantity of foam start to rise, screw the cap back down and wait a moment. Then begin to open again, and as foam rises, tightly close. Repeat this process a few times until the beverage is no longer so pressurized, and you can open without spewing foam. Carbonation enhances these beverages in moderation, but in excess it results in waste and dangerous explosions. Be careful. Ginger beer with ginger bug. Ginger beer is a classic flavor of homemade soda. It can be made lightly gingered, like most commercial ginger ale, or as spicy as you can take it using lots of ginger. A ginger bug is a simple ginger beer starter. It can also be used as a starter for other beverages, made from ginger, sugar, and water. Ginger beer can also be made with many different types of starters. A ginger bug could not be easier to start. Grate a bit of ginger, with skin, into a small jar. Add some water and sugar, and stir. Stir frequently, and add a little more grated ginger and sugar each day for a few days until the mixture is vigorously bubbly. Ginger roots are rich in yeasts and lactic acid bacteria, so ginger bugs usually get bubbly quickly. However, many people have reported that their ginger bugs never get bubbly. My theory is that most of the ginger imported into the United States has undergone irradiation, thus destroying its bacteria and yeast. Foods marketed as organic cannot be irradiated, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's organic standards. So, for best results, make ginger bug with organic ginger, or ginger from a known, non-irradiated source. Once your bug is vigorously bubbly, or you have one of the other starters, prepare a ginger decoction that will become your ginger beer. I like to make a concentrated decoction that cools to body temperature as it is later diluted with cold water. To make such a concentrate, fill a cooking pot with water measuring about half the volume of ginger beer you wish to make. Add finely sliced or grated ginger using 2 to 6 inches, 5 to 15 centimeter, of ginger root, or more, for each gallon or 4 liters of ginger beer you are making, though only half this volume is in the pot. Bring to a boil, then gently simmer the ginger, covered, for about 15 minutes. If in doubt about how much ginger to add, experiment. Start with a smaller amount, taste after boiling and diluting, and if a stronger flavor is desired, add more and boil another 15 minutes. After boiling the ginger, strain the liquid into an open fermentation vessel, crock, wide-mouth jar, or bucket, discarding the spent ginger pieces, or leave the ginger in and strain later. Add sugar. I usually use 2 cups of sugar per gallon, of target volume, still requiring more water, but you might like it a little sweeter than I do. Once sugar is dissolved in hot ginger water, use additional water to reach the target volume. This will cool your sweet ginger decoction. If it feels hot to the touch, leave it a few hours to cool before adding ginger bug or other starter. If it feels no warmer than body temperature, go ahead and add ginger bug or other starter. Add a little lemon juice too, if you like. Stir well. Cover with a cloth to protect from flies and leave to ferment in the open vessel, stirring periodically until the ginger beer is visibly bubbly, anywhere from a few hours to a few days depending upon temperature and the potency of the starter. Once your ginger beer is bubbly, you can bottle it. If you wish to minimize alcohol content, bottle it quickly and give it a short time to ferment in the bottle. If you prefer a more alcoholic brew, leave it to ferment for several days before bottling. Observe daily and bottle after bubbling has peaked and begun to slow down. Either way, in bottling, always be aware of the possible dangers of overcarbonation. Leave bottles to ferment at ambient temperatures until they become carbonated. Gauge carbonation with a plastic soda bottle. When it resists squeezing between your fingers and no longer yields easily, it is carbonated. Refrigerate bottles to cool and prevent further carbonation. Ginger beer will continue to slowly ferment and pressurize in the refrigerator, so enjoy it within a few weeks. I've also made starters from other similar rhizomes, specifically turmeric and galangal, with wonderful results. I made raw soft drinks with each of them by placing grated roots into a bottle with light sugar water and leaving to ferment about a week. Sparkly and delicious. Kvass. Kvass is a lovely, refreshing, effervescent sour beverage usually made from old bread. It is traditional in Russia, Ukraine, Lithuania, and other countries of Eastern Europe, where mobile kvass wagons can still be found, especially in summertime. Kvass is so iconic in this region that other types of sour beverages are also called kvass, beet kvass, for instance, or tea kvass, a name for kombucha. According to Elena Malakovitz, author of the 1861 Russian cookbook A Gift to Young Housewives, at that time drinking kvass was a culture-laden act that helped to define one's Russianness. Similarly, today in Russia, kvass is being marketed with an appeal to nationalistic pride. An internet blogger translated a Russian news report. Local drink producers advertise their products as patriotic alternatives to Western drinks. One of them even chose a patriotic name, Nikola, alluding to Nay-Cola, not cola. In the last year, they even launched an anti-colonization campaign against colonizing Western soft drinks. The only starter needed to make kvass is a sourdough starter, easy to start from flour and water. If your starter is not vigorously bubbly, feed and stir it for a few days before you start your kvass. Or you can use a packet of yeast to start kvass instead. The primary ingredient in kvass is bread, usually old, dry, and hard bread, though fresh bread works fine too. Traditionally, kvass is made primarily from rye bread, but bread from wheat or other grains can be used. Periodically, the scavengers in my life show up with big bags of discarded loaves. Bakeries often give away their bread at the end of each day, and supermarket dumpster divers often find bagged loaves past their Best Buy date. Chop bread into large chunks and dry in a warm oven for about 15 minutes. Meanwhile, boil water, enough to cover the bread. I usually start kvass in an open ceramic crock, but a large cooking pot works fine for the pre-fermentation stage. Once the bread is dry, transfer to a vessel. Add a little dried mint or other herbs. Pour boiled water over the bread and mint, enough to cover all the bread. The bread will float and rise with the water level, so press down to gauge when you have added enough water. Leave a plate on top of the bread to weigh it down and keep it submerged. Cover the crock with a cloth to keep flies off and leave overnight. In the morning, strain and press the liquid from the bread solids. The way I accomplish this is by lining a colander with a few layers of cheesecloth. I scoop the soggy bread from the crock into the colander. Then, as it fills, I gather the corners of the cheesecloth together, twist and wring out the liquid, and then knead the ball of cloth-encased soggy bread from different angles, trying to force out liquid. I squeeze as much as I can, not necessarily every last bit, then dump the spent bread, place the cheesecloth back in the colander, and continue until all is strained. Then I measure the liquid, less than the water you added, as it is impossible to press it all out. Transfer it to an appropriate-sized jar or crock, and for each gallon, or 4 liters, add a pinch of salt, about 1/2 cup, 125 milliliters, of honey or sugar, the juice of a lemon, and 1/2 cup, 125 milliliters, sourdough, or water kefir, or a packet of yeast, and stir thoroughly. Cover the kvass mixture with a cloth and leave to ferment a day or two, stirring when you can. Once the kvass is bubbling vigorously, it is ready to bottle. Bottles will pressurize rapidly. Review the earlier recommendations and cautions for carbonating sweet beverages. Often in less than 24 hours, my bottles of kvass have become highly carbonated. A traditional way of gauging the carbonation of kvass, like the other carbonated beverages described previously, is to place a couple of raisins in each bottle, which rise to the top as the kvass carbonates. Once bottles of kvass are carbonated, transfer to the refrigerator to slow continued carbonation. Enjoy kvass as a refreshing beverage, or use as a base for cold summer soups like akrashka. If you get into a rhythm of regular production, you can leave out the sourdough starter and use some bubbly kvass as the starter for the next batch. Any of the beverages in this chapter can be self-perpetuated in this way. There are many other sour tonic beverages enjoyed around the world based on grains. Many indigenous beers, covered in Chapter 9, are sour as well as mildly alcoholic. Others are included in Chapter 8 on fermenting grains and starchy tubers. I have included kvass here because it is so unique, so different in technique from most other grain ferments, and so iconic as a sour beverage. Tepache and Alua. Tepache is a Mexican soft drink, historically made from corn, but in its contemporary manifestation, usually made from fruit. Alua is the name for a very similar group of lightly fermented beverages enjoyed in northeastern Brazil. Making these is essentially the same as starting a fruit-infused wine, sugar water plus fruit, only it is fermented more briefly. Various fruits such as pineapple, apple, and orange are used, reports the UN Food and Agriculture Organization on Tepache. The pulp and juice of the fruit are allowed to ferment for 1 or 2 days in water with some added brown sugar. After a day or two, the tepache is a sweet and refreshing beverage. If fermentation is allowed to proceed longer, it turns into an alcoholic beverage and later into vinegar. One popular flavor of both tepache and alua is pineapple, made by simply mixing pineapple peels in sugar water. Mix sugar water to taste, using sugar as little refined as you can find, or honey or other sweeteners. In tropical heat, 24 hours of fermentation typically suffices. In cooler temperatures, fermentation will take several days. Evaluate by tasting. After a brief fermentation, it is bubbly and light. A few more days, and it gets more alcoholic. A few more, and it starts to be very vinegary. Karen Herterbees of North Carolina has a raspberry farm and makes a raspberry soft drink exactly this way, which her kids call Rasp Bubble. Karen dissolves 1 cup, 250 milliliters, of honey in 3 quarts or liters of water and adds a quart or liter of fresh raspberries. She ferments the mix for about 3 days before transferring to the refrigerator. She says her kids prefer it to commercial soda. Typically, tepache is prepared as a wild fermentation without any starter beyond the raw fruit. Sometimes granules called tibicos or tibis are used, the same or functionally similar to water kefir grains, water kefir. Fruit kvass. Hannah Springer, from her blog at www.healthyfamilychronicles.blogspot.com, and inspired by Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, author of Gut and Psychology Syndrome. Pick out a combination of fruit, berries, and fresh herbs or spices that you think would go well together, and get started. In a 1-quart/liter wide mouth mason jar, combine the following. Be sure to use organic ingredients for the best fermentation results. A big handful of berries, 1 sliced core fruit, such as apple or pear, 1 tablespoon of grated ginger, 1/2 cup, 125 milliliters, raw milk whey, enough filtered water to fill the jar. Combine all ingredients, top off with water, place a weight of some sort on top of the fruit to keep it submerged, and close tightly. Keep on the counter in a warmish place for 3 days before transferring to the fridge. You can top off the bottle with filtered water and a splash of whey when it gets low until the fruit is all used up. This recipe can be varied by using different fruits, citrus juices, fresh herbs, or even vegetables. Mabi/Mabi. Mabi, also known as Mabi, is a tonic beverage popular on some of the islands of the Caribbean, made from a sweetened decoction of the bark of a tree also known as Mabi, or in English, soldierwood, Colubrina elliptica. One account of the etymology of the name Mabi is that it comes from Creole for the French ma bière, my beer. I first heard about Mabi from Noricel Massenet, who lives in Puerto Rico, and mailed me some Mabi bark to experiment with and provided some guidance. Although I found several recipes for Mabi on the web, they all call for cinnamon and ginger, and I just couldn't find those flavors in my taste buds' memory. Today I spoke with the Mabi lady at our organic market in San Juan, who only uses the bark and sugar, and she said something that made sense to me. You have to try it, and it is in the process of making it that you will develop your own recipe. Beautiful. Noricel worried that I would not be able to make Mabi without mature Mabi as a starter, but starters are largely interchangeable, so I tried using water kefir as a starter and produced a delicious bubbly beverage. Compounds in the Mabi, saponins, hold the bubbles and produce a foamy head. The bittersweet flavor of Mabi really spoke to me, but never having tasted anyone else's Mabi, I had no reference point. Then, in 2010, I was invited to teach at the Virgin Islands Sustainable Farming Institute on the island of St. Croix. And at the Saturday morning market there, I was thrilled to finally encounter Mabi. Though on St. Croix and other Anglophone islands, it is mostly known as Mabi. The Mabi was dark and bubbly, produced in small batches as an informal cottage industry, and sold in recycled juice and liquor bottles, bulging with pressure. I bought a couple of bottles from a St. Croix Mabi maker who allowed me to photograph her but refused to divulge the specific spice mix in her recipe. A woman's got to have her secrets, she told me. I was able to bury a small bottle of Mabi in my luggage, and I have been making Mabi the traditional way ever since, using mature Mabi as the starter. A friend brought me some more Mabi bark, purchased at a convenience store in Alabama, and I found a source on the internet where I was able to purchase a 5-pound, 2.3-kilogram bag. I boil a handful of the bark in water for about half an hour, usually alone, sometimes with star anise, ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, or mace. Then I add sugar and more water to taste. Because of the bitterness of the Mabi bark, I make it pretty sweet. I'd recommend 3 cups of sugar per gallon, or 4 liters, as a starting point, and adjust to taste. Noricel recommends using Muscovado sugar, although I have mostly used evaporated cane juice. My friend Brett Guadagnino talked to a Mabi maker in the British Virgin Islands who added a pinch of salt. One internet recipe I found, posted by Cynthia, a Guyana-born woman transplanted to Barbados, called for making a mabi concentrate by boiling mabi bark and other spices in a small quantity of water, then adding that to a gallon of sugar water. Like all fermentation traditions, mabi varies in its particular details. Once the mix cools to body temperature, add the starter and stir. At least, that's what I do. Cynthia's recipe uses no starter whatsoever, but describes how to brew the mabi. Using a large cup, dip into the mixture, fill the cup, and then pour it back into the container. Do this for at least 3 minutes. Ferment the mabi a few days, stirring or brewing periodically. Once the mabi gets bubbly, bottle it and allow it to ferment another day or two until the bottles become pressurized. Refrigerate and serve chilled for a refreshing, bubbly, bittersweet treat. Water kefir, aka tibikos. Water kefir is one of many names used to describe a versatile culture that can be used to ferment any carbohydrate-rich liquid. I usually use it to ferment sugar water with some fruit in it for flavor, but I've also used it to ferment honey, fruit juices, coconut water, and soy, almond, and rice milks. The culture, also known as tibikos or tibis, sugary water grains, Tibetan crystals, Japanese water crystals, and bees wine, is a SCOBY, a symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast, which appear as small whitish translucent granules and grow quickly when fed regularly. Water kefir is not directly related to kefir, the ancient culture from the Caucasus Mountains used to ferment milk. It would seem that because they are similar in form, people perceived them as related, even though they are distinctly different. A study of the microbial flora of sugary kefir grains found that they consisted chiefly of lactic acid bacteria and a small proportion of yeasts. One particular bacterium, Lactobacillus hilgardii, was found to produce the polysaccharide gel that forms the home of the fermenting community. Fermenting with water kefir is extremely simple. Typically, I mix sugar water, to taste, in a wide-mouth glass jar. Try 2 cups of sugar per gallon or 4 liters of water as a starting point, but many people prefer to ferment a sweeter solution. To that, I add the water kefir grains, about 1 tablespoon or 15 milliliters per quart or liter, and usually a small amount of fresh or dried fruit, and ferment usually for 2 to 3 days. The vessel can either be sealed airtight or loosely covered to allow air circulation. Water kefir does not need oxygen, but it's not inhibited by it. After about 2 days, I remove the fruit, typically floating at the top, strain the fermenting solution through cheesecloth to remove water kefir grains, and transfer the fermented solution into sealable bottles. Then I prepare a new sugar solution for the grains and seal the bottles of fermented water kefir, leaving the sealed bottles to carbonate as they continue to ferment at ambient temperatures for another day or two, monitoring the pressure and moving pressurized bottles to the refrigerator to prevent overcarbonation. Water kefir color will shift with different sweeteners and added ingredients, as will growth rates and grain sizes. Like any SCOBY, water kefir requires regular attention, feeding, and care. Typically, it should be fed fresh sugar every 2 days, in cold spaces every 3 days. Left too long unfed in acidic solution, the organisms that compose the grain will die, and the grains themselves will literally pickle. Water kefir works best if you can get into the rhythm of a regular routine. If you go away, leave water kefir grains in a fresh sugar water solution in the refrigerator. If you go away for longer than a couple of weeks, they may not survive, so you might want to have someone feed them periodically. You may also dry water kefir grains for long-term storage, or as a backup, either in the sun or in a dehydrator. Store dried grains in the refrigerator for longest survival. People have also reported freezing water kefir grains for storage of up to several months. To do this, simply rinse the grains, pat them dry, and freeze in a sealed bag. Water kefir will ferment any type of sugar or other sweeteners such as honey, maple syrup, agave syrup, rice syrup, or barley malt. Stevia and other non-carbohydrate sweeteners will not ferment. Many people ferment coconut water using water kefir. Coconut milk and nut, seed, and grain milks can also be fermented in this way. Herbal infusions or decoctions can be sweetened and fermented with water kefir. Fruit juices, provided they are not too acidic, can also be fermented by water kefir. Missouri fermentation enthusiast Allison Ewald describes her water kefir practice of fermenting pure grape juice. The grape juice ends up completely explosive, like champagne. Her family calls the fermented fruit juice fruit beer. Like root beer, only made from fruits instead of roots, and because, like root beer, it's basically a soda or soft drink, albeit an oh-so-slightly and deliciously alcoholic one. Fruit beer rolls right off the tongue. For highly acidic juices, such as pineapple or citrus juices, dilute a small proportion of juice, around 25%, with sugared water. Water kefir can be used to ferment many different types of sweet liquids. One I tasted was coffee-flavored. Try herbal elixir ferments with sweetened sun teas, infusions, and decoctions. Be aware that it can be difficult to separate water kefir grains from teas and small bits of plant material, and that some herbs with antimicrobial compounds may inhibit the kefir grains. Fermentation enthusiast Favero Greenforest of Washington developed an innovative two-stage system in which he maintains the grains themselves in sugar water with just a slice or two of fruit, which he calls the starter, and feeds every couple of days. He then adds the starter to various other sugary solutions. In a gallon-sized jar, I make a sugar solution and add whatever fruit I want to use, then add the starter solution, leaving the kefir grains in the starter jar. That way I keep track of them and they don't get lost. The resulting ferment works great and I don't have to worry about losing the SCOBYs. Various factors can influence the growth rate of the water kefir SCOBY. Dominic Anfiteatro, an Australian fermentation enthusiast whose website is the Internet's most comprehensive source of information about all forms of kefir, has documented 48-hour water kefir SCOBY weight increases ranging from 7% to 220%. Dom recommends adding ginger to increase growth and using less refined forms of sugar or adding molasses. He also observes that mineral-rich hard water promotes water kefir SCOBY growth, while distilled water or water purified using an activated carbon filter can retard growth. If hard water is not available, Dom recommends adding 1/8 teaspoon of baking soda per 1/2 gallon, 2 liters. Another mineralizing idea of Dom's is to add a small amount of crushed eggshells, limestone, or ocean coral to the fermenting solution. Too much, however, can cause the development of a slimy texture in the water kefir. The more traditional name of water kefir appears to be tibicos, a Mexican culture. According to some reports, tibicos are derived from the fruits of cacti in the genus Opuntia. Ethnobotanist William Litzinger reports that tibicos commonly are found to develop naturally beneath the epidermis of ripe cactus fruits and in the residue left in the fermentation vessel shortly after the main portion of a batch of wine, colonche, is removed. I've tried this without success, but then I was not working with freshly picked fruit, so I am not ready to disregard this information from a source I have generally found to be thorough and reliable. It could be that only the fruit of a particular Opuntia variety produces these masses, or some other specific condition. In 1899, the Journal of the Royal Microscopical Society published a report on the culture, regarded as tibi grains, in which M.L. Lutz describes them as spherical transparent masses resembling boiled rice grains. These vary in size from a pea to a pin's head. They ferment sugar water and produce a light, agreeable beverage. Microscopical examination shows that the tibi grains are composed of bacilli and yeasts. The fermentation occurs only by the cooperation of the two organisms, either alone being insufficient. Evidently, Lutz, and probably others before him, brought the tibi grains back home, and they have continued to spread and be propagated. Exchange, migration, and adaptation can render origins extremely murky. The 1978 book Life of Yeasts describes the tibi consortium as being Swiss. This popular Swiss drink is a sour, weakly alcoholic carbonated liquid made by fermentation of a 15% cane sugar solution to which dried figs, raisins, and a little lemon juice have been added. The inoculation is done by adding a number of tibi grains. These consist of a encapsulated bacterium and a yeast that live symbiotically. The combined action produces lactic acid, alcohol, and CO2. The tibi grains multiply during fermentation and can be transferred to a subsequent batch. It took me a long time to figure out that water kefir is Tibikos. There are other similar cultures, such as ginger beer plant, so named and used in England. Ginger beer plant, GBP, was a subject of scientific investigation and an 1892 report in the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society of London. The author, H. Marshall Ward, describes the microbiology of the ginger beer plant, but confesses to be utterly clueless as to its origins. Professor Bailey Balfour states, "It is said the ginger beer plant was introduced into Britain by soldiers from the Crimea in 1855. But so far as I can discover, this was mere conjecture, and it is not to be taken as an accepted piece of history." Dr. Ransom informs me, in a letter dated April 1891, "Some say it was brought from Italy, but this again I have failed to substantiate more definitely. The whole question as to whence it was first derived, in fact, is enshrouded in mystery." For a while, I had come to the conclusion that GBP was also Tibikos, and that both were the same thing as water kefir. Then my friend Jay Bost, an ethnobotanist very interested in fermentation who had recently been given Tibikos by a friend in Mexico, sent me a link to the website yimuz.com, which was selling cultures of both Tibikos and ginger beer plant. I wrote to them to inquire about how distinct the two cultures really are. "We've noticed many differences," explained Nathan and Emily Pujol, the couple who propagate the cultures and run the site. Both respond very differently to the same recipe, using control tests, etc. Also, both have a much different appearance to the discerning eye, GBP being more round, murky, and much tinier, Tibikos being more jagged, clear, and quite a bit larger. We've also noticed that with the occasional oddball grains, Tibikos will always be exceptionally large and triangular, whereas GBP will form an almost spiral torpedo shape. I have never seen either form the shape of the other. It seems very specific to the culture. Indeed, when Nathan and Emily sent me samples of the two cultures, I could plainly see that visually they are quite distinct. I now believe that the first water kefir grains I was given were actually ginger beer plant, and only later, after those had died of neglect, did I get Tibikos, though without seeing them side by side, I did not notice a difference. Functionally, the major difference between the two cultures seems to be that the Tibikos ferment faster than the ginger beer plant and need to be fed more often. Another place where similar SCOBY granules are reported is Sudan. Hamid Dirar, author of The Indigenous Fermented Foods of the Sudan, describes a fermented honey beverage in Sudan called Duma, fermented using grains known as Iyal Duma. The grains are visible to the naked eye and have flattened and irregular shapes, varying in diameter from 2 to 6 millimeters, up to 1/4 inch, reports Dirar. They consist of both yeast and bacteria in an elaborate configuration. Under microscopic examination, the yeast were noticed to be invariably surrounded by tangles of a chain-forming, heavy slime-producing, fat bacterial rod. The long chains of the bacterium, encapsulated in thick slime, actually engulfed each of the yeast cells and seemed to keep the yeast aggregate together. Duma is produced by different families as a cottage industry. Dirar writes, "The grain line owned by each family has descended from past generations of the family to the present generation as a business secret, not to be relinquished to strangers. Each family claims that its grains are better fermenters of Duma than those of other families. Many brewers claim that Duma grains only derive from previous Duma grains, while others describe ways and means by which the grains can be raised from natural sources, usually roots of the Delib palm, Berassus aethiopum, in honey water. Perhaps you have access to Delib palms or Opuntia cacti and figure out how to obtain grains from them. Perhaps in some wild fermentation you will find a precipitate and then discover that it grows and ferments, as the pioneer developers of all these cultures presumably did in the speculative prehistoric past. Otherwise, you will have to obtain water kefir, or ginger beer plant, or Tibikos, not Duma, so far as I have found, grains from commercial sources or from people who are already using them. Regular use of these grains results in rapid proliferation. Everyone working with them ends up with more grains than they know what to do with. There are people out there with water kefir grains, and many other cultures, willing to freely and enthusiastically share them. When you find fellow fermenters who can provide you with desired cultures, make an effort to build relationships of sharing information and mutual aid. The internet can be a powerful resource for networking, with online trading posts and many opportunities to post messages to targeted groups of people with similar interests. Use your quest for water kefir grains and other cultures as an opportunity to make connections and build community. The bacteria and yeasts are the primary actors in fermentation, but their growth and spread are the result of human actions and interactions. Be creative and persistent in your cultural revival efforts. Whey as a starter. Whey is the thin liquid that separates from curds when milk curdles or sours. The curds are coagulated fats and other solids. Whey is a nutritive byproduct of cheese making, as well as yogurt and kefir making. For our present purposes, whey can be used as a starter for naturally carbonated sodas and other sour tonic beverages. It can be produced in many different ways, but if produced by means of heat, it will not contain live cultures. Whey derived from cultured or raw milk products without high heat is, of course, populated by abundant microbial communities. The most vigorously active whey starter is from kefir, dairy kefir, not water kefir, because the kefir community includes yeasts as well as lactic acid bacteria. In the first day of fermentation, kefir typically does not curdle, but after 2 or 3 days it does, with milk fats floating to the top, then eventually sinking. Before consuming kefir, typically I shake the jar to reintegrate the curds and whey, but if you want to use the whey, gently pour some off. It makes the most vigorous starter when it is freshly fermented, though it can be stored in the refrigerator for weeks or months. To ferment a beverage using whey, simply add whey to the beverage base in a proportion of roughly 5 to 10% by volume. So, for a quart/liter, use about 2 to 3 ounces, 1/4 cup, or 50 to 100 milliliter of whey. The beverage base can be sweetened water with fruit, a sweetened herbal infusion or decoction, or fruit juice. Mix whey into the sweet liquid you wish to ferment and leave to ferment about 24 hours, until the beverage is bubbly, then transfer to sealable bottles and seal. Leave sealed bottles at room temperature another 24 hours or so until pressurized, then refrigerate. As always, beware excess pressure and avoid explosions. Serve chilled. Roots beer. A traditional root beer is a sweetened and fermented decoction of flavorful plant roots. Contrary to the commonly known singular root beer, various roots have been used and can be used. As a matter of fact, mixing together more than one type of root yields a better flavor than a single root alone. My friend, Frank Cook, reported that when he visited Jamaica, he encountered, plural, roots beers, containing the roots of many different plants rather than singular root beer. Elroy's Jamaican Roots Beer. Frank Cook. Jamaica is famous for its roots beers made by Rastafarian Bushmen. During my journeys there, I had several opportunities to slow down with Bushmen and learn a bit about the process they use in making their brews and the plants they incorporate. When making the brews, the Bushmen used a range of different plants, and the number of ingredients was significant to them energetically. I did not learn the deeper meanings behind this, but I understood that certain numbers were important to the Bushmen. One Bushman, Elroy, I feel indebted to for slowing down and letting me take in how he brewed. He went out and harvested a bunch of plants, including Jamaica's second most famous plant, Jamaican sarsaparilla root. I recognized about half the plants he used. They included Jamaican sarsaparilla, smilax, root, strongback, kufia, root, shut-eye marker, mimosa, plant, dandelion, senna, plant, coconut, cocos, root, guava, psidium, root, vervain, verbena, plant, chaney root, blood wrist plant, hug me close root, tan pan root, jack saga root, long liver, cold tongue, dark tongue, dog's tongue, search me heart, soon on the earth, God's bush, devil has whip, water grass, raw moon. Elroy fills a pot with all this, adds water, and then he splits open 5 green bananas and lays them across the top for iron. He cooked all this on an open fire for 2 hours. Then he added honey and poured it into bottles. In about 3 days, one could start drinking them, and they would be good for a week or so, if they lasted that long, before they turned to vinegar. I tried a number of different ones when I was there and enjoyed their vitality and flavors. In my own roots beer practice, I have brewed root mixes that revolve around sassafras because it has a pleasant flavor and is abundant in the woods where I live. But I always add other roots, most often ginger, licorice, and burdock. Sarsaparilla, Smilax fragelii, is another traditional ingredient. I encourage you to experiment with proportions and other combinations. Decide how much roots beer you want to make, your target volume, and measure half that amount. Boil roots in measured water to create a concentrate. The advantage of boiling the roots in only half the water is that it's easy to cool by adding the remaining water cold, after boiling roots for at least an hour, add sugar. I usually use 2 cups of sugar per gallon, based on the target volume, but you might like it a little sweeter than I do. Once sugar is dissolved in the hot root decoction, add the remaining half of the cold water to reach target volume. Taste and add sugar if necessary. Adding water will cool your sweet decoction. If it still feels hot to the touch, leave it a few hours to cool before adding starter. If it feels no warmer than body temperature, go ahead and add starter. Starter can be water kefir, ginger bug, whey, yeast, or a previous batch of roots beer. Ferment a day or two until the mixture is vigorously bubbly, then transfer to bottles, seal, and ferment another day or two until bottles are pressurized. Then chill to slow continued fermentation, always heeding the caution against overcarbonation and explosions, and enjoy. Pru. Pru is a tonic beverage from Cuba. It is made from a variety of botanical sources, most commonly a mixture of several, including Guayana polygama, bark and stem, Pimenta dioica, allspice, fruits and leaves, and Smilax domingensis, or Smilax javanensis, rhizomes. A team of ethnobotanical investigators describe its preparation as follows. Stems of G. polygama are cut lengthwise in 2 or 4 parts, thus exposing the inner wood. Sometimes the bark is peeled away. The stems should be fresh and used for 1 decoction only. The rhizome of S. domingensis is cut into little pieces, ruedas, that can be boiled 2 or 3 times, while the leaves of P. dioica should be dried and can only be used once. During the day, the roots, stems, and leaves are steeped in a large pot for about 2 hours until the water comes to a boil. Some pruseros turn off the fire when the water starts boiling, while others leave the pot for another 10 or 15 minutes and then turn it off. Then, vegetal parts are removed and the decoction is strained 2 or 3 times through a cloth, some use a woolen cloth, and left all night to cool. In the morning, sugar and a fermentation starter, called madre, are added to the decoction, which then must be stirred with a wooden spoon to obtain rapid and homogeneous fermentation. Madre is previously fermented pru that is 2 to 3 days old that has an unpleasant vinegar-like taste. It probably contains bacteria, fungi, and/or yeasts responsible for the fermentation process. All pruseros use it as a starter to enhance fermentation and to speed up the production process since, without madre, pru making would take 72 hours instead of 48. Each time that pru is produced, producers store the madre necessary for the next fermentation process. According to the data collected, traditionally, pru was not prepared with madre. It is now widely used. After the addition of sugar and madre, pru is stored in bottles which are tightly capped and put into the sun, in a patio or on the roof of a house, all day long to ferment. The complete consensus of our informants about the importance and necessity of fermenting pru in capped bottles may represent an adaptation to modern food habits of the Cuban population. The resulting effervescence makes pru seem more like an industrial soft drink. Traditionally, pru has been produced and consumed only in eastern Cuba. After the 1991 collapse of the Soviet Union and the ensuing economic crisis in Cuba, industrial soft drinks disappeared from shops and homes to be replaced by locally available traditional beverages. Thus, pru spread westward and is now available throughout Cuba.